Mini episode 1417 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1417. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. And I have two of our FDH Lounge dignitaries. First time we're pairing them up. And we're going to take a look at the stretch run of the 2021 NFL season. And I'm going to do the old Babe Ruth point to the fence thing here at the outset and say, by the end of this thing, you will not believe that these two guys have never done a segment together. This I promise you. It'll sound like we've done a bunch of them. I'm calling my shot. And while I'm at it at the beginning here, I will get in the cheap plug for myself. Buy the book, buy the book, buy the book. We just did our last mini episode with the announcement of the top 75 players in pro basketball history, myself, Russ Cohen, and Ben Chu, first released on Kindle prior to Christmas, and then the soft cover in the new year. So please check that out. And I'm going to have some things in here to plug for these guys as well. Let me lead with my longtime friend, Joe Stazak, who is, of course, a longtime Philly broadcast veteran and TV and radio, presently these days worldwide, on the Callous Remarks podcast with fellow FDH Lounge dignitary and good friend Steve Callous. And I want to preface this by saying that Joe is my favorite Philly broadcaster ever. And this covers a lot of ground. As anybody's like, well, you've never lived in Philly, Rick. What does that mean? Well, look, we've had other Philly people on the show, and they've been great, anybody that we have. There have been some others that we didn't get a chance to. We were chasing, unfortunately, right before he passed, Harry Callous, no relation to Steve Callous. That would have been great, but I have a lot of admiration for him. It's noteworthy when I say this because I used to talk about this in the old Sports Talk Network days when I was really kind of a zygote at doing this kind of stuff. And when there wasn't really kind of a blueprint for the kind of stuff I like doing, that the guy that I kind of patterned myself after, if you want to call it that, when I looked around, he was a Philly guy that went national. And it was a thing where, you know, I was just sort of taken by the whole notion of like what you're going to hear tonight, where it hopefully sounds like the elevated version, hopefully, of three friends talking football on a couch. It really didn't kind of exist back then. It used to be kind of a why so serious kind of a medium back then, the talk radio, really prior to when the whole podcast culture took off. And the guy that I'm talking about in particular is Tony Bruno. That's a guy where I looked at it and I kind of patterned myself after him a little bit because I wanted to do something where you could have some fun with it, have smart people with you, but don't even always feel like you have to stick to sports. And this is the show where nothing is off topic, so we do a lot of stuff that's non-sports, although this is a football segment. But when I say that that's the guy that I really kind of patterned myself after until I found my own voice and really kind of still have always had an admiration for what he did, kind of blazing a trail. When I say that Joe Stazak is number one on my list from having worked with him and having had the mutual admiration that we've got along the way here, that tells you something. So I'm not elevating Joe Stazak above a bunch of jabronis. He's number one in my book for a very good reason. And with that, I bring in my Goomba, Joe Stazak. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Rick. You'll always be on my payroll, and I appreciate the kind words you said. I got to be honest, if you're going to talk about someone that you've kind of revered and emulated and always had an admiration for, Tony Bruno is one of my favorites because of exactly everything you said. And he's one of those guys that didn't care if he would just up and leave a job in the middle of a contract. Yeah. Let me try something else. He would always pop up. He was almost a pioneer in the podcast. I didn't even know what a podcast was when he started doing them. I was on a show with a couple former colleagues the other day, Eitan Shander and Harry Mays, formerly at 97.5. All of a sudden, they pop him in the middle of the show. I was like, I felt like, wow, this is one of those where you're going to have to exchange jerseys at the end of the show. So I got to get Bruno's jersey, because I was like, wow, I've never been on a show with Tony Bruno. He's an awesome guy. He doesn't take things too seriously. He can talk about other things. He's just having fun. All he does is have fun. And that's a very good individual to, like you said, that when you saw, coming up and you wanted to point out someone and maybe follow what he does or emulate. Bingo. You nailed it with Tony Bruno. I'm impressed you said that, bro.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I didn't even know you'd gotten a chance to do a show with him. That is awesome. That's
one show I do. I was thrilled. I was out of my mind when he popped up. They just popped him in. They had me on as a guest, and then they popped him on. We had so much fun. It was so much fun.
Dude, that's a Walter Mitty moment. I got to hear that with you with him on there. That is friggin' incredible. Yeah, I mean, that's, to have a show where you're having fun and really kind of, like I said, that's not how the mold used to be. And when I was younger, it was not really that way. And it took somebody like him to really kind of point that. So like I said, when I say Joe Sazak, my favorite from Philly, that's what you're placing above right there.
I appreciate it. Thank you very kindly. I flattered. I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the amount of esteem that I have for you here. You have been a part on this show, and you've talked a number of sports with me, but football many times previously here. A part of, as I had said on a recent show here, I mean, I'll take this bench of people I got and I'll put it up against anybody, because up and down the line, people being able to talk football. And as I had alluded to, back in September on the show, had an opportunity in the summer to do something I hadn't even really thought about in a while, and that was just to kind of build out from there. And again, anytime you have a team like this and you have a chance to add to it with a fresh voice, that's always a great thing to be able to do. So thus, I start my introduction of Derek Joseph. You would have heard him doing our week one of the NFL review back in September, first time on the show here, and did a tremendous job with me. And again, doing a good job bringing a different perspective to the show here amidst all the other established perspectives that we've had over a period of time. So I knew it would be a lot of fun to start having him mix it up with some of the other folks. And we start with Joe here today. And in terms of plugs here, I plugged my book. I plugged the Callous Remarks podcast. The plug that I know Derek would want me to make here would be the entire operation over there at the Maya Master Publishing burgeoning empire, as it were, where, as I've said previously on the show here, if I may make an AEW reference, which I make those left and right these days with Don Callis, the invisible hand, that I've had a bunch of people be the invisible hand for me, and I've done it for a bunch of people, and I know a good job when I see it. And Derek is certainly doing that over there and providing very, very good stability and balance to the operation over there. And the first run of books, as I understand it, to be re-released. I don't want to get ahead of myself by saying that, but keep an eye peeled at Chaotic Goodist on Twitter, or if you just do a search under Maya Master, you'll see it there. Again, a truly, truly gargantuan talent, and someone through whom I met Derek. And again, this is a thing also, too, in terms of, I made the joke about this last time, as far as the Twitter handle, Dude Cav, that he and I have a shared reverence of the three-letter word Cav for different reasons. Cavalry in his case, Cavaliers in my case. I can't shut up these days about Evan Mobley. I think I probably worked him into 59 consecutive conversations, and that's what you would expect of me, but... two men can revere the same three letters for completely different reasons. But Derek, it is great to really have you back on the show here. Pair you up with Joe here tonight. I'm looking forward to it. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, no, absolutely happy to be back. I mean, I will say, for a different perspective, definitely adding the youthful experience of a 28-year-old, because when you guys were going back and forth about those broadcasters, I think, or whoever, I didn't have a clue who you were talking about. So hopefully I'm not making everyone feel too old, but no, I'm super excited to be here. Thank you for shouting out Maya. She's obviously the better half with all the talent in this household, but always happy to, come on and talk to you guys about football, especially with, my team being number one in the league right now.
They are. We're going to talk about that. And by the way, and as I said before, you know, what me and you and everybody else has in common is we all stand in the shadow of Maya and what she's on her way to becoming here at this point. So that's for damn sure. But, you know, yeah, it's really... it's a funny thing here. I didn't realize that, you know, Tony Bruno, who I think the 2000s is when he was big on Fox Sports Radio. That was probably, I would say, the apex of his career. Is that pretty much the apex of it, Joe, would you say? I mean, he's kind of...
He was on in the morning and he did a show at night. Yeah. He did two shows a day. He'll do anything, you know, and he's very good at it.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere... you know, when they popped him into that show, he was in some trailer in, like, North Carolina. I don't even know what he was doing, but he's just, you know, he's Tony Bruno. Yeah, I'll come on and do it. And it was great. We had fun. We talked about sports and porn stars and all kinds of weird stuff and eclectic stuff. And it was just, you know, we had a blast.
That's right. Bruno
sounds
might drop.
Sounds like a modern-day sports podcast.
Yes.
That's exactly right. You know, just add Tony Bruno and you're ready to go.
Well, that's it, Derek, you know, and that's the thing, and that's the appreciation that I have and that Joe has for him is before this whole kind of podcast culture had come about, you know, and quite frankly, you know, yeah, being 28, I mean, this is something where, you know, you've had it around a good chunk of your life, but, you know, not to be the, you know, get off my lawn guy, but it wasn't always that way. I mean, it was a much more straight-laced kind of a deal before there was people like him kind of pointing the way and kind of anticipating what was going to be coming and paving the way for shows like this. And thank God shows like this exist because it gives us a chance to talk football. And we might as well start where you dropped a little nugget there, Derek. Arizona has been the number one seed in our FDH rankings the last couple of weeks. Obviously, they have the best record in the league. I picked them for the playoffs at the beginning of the year. Having said that, it was more along the lines of, I knew that the 5, 6, 7 seeds might end up being relatively suspect, and I thought in that kind of a talent pool that they would make it. They've obviously exceeded my expectations. My hometown team has wildly underperformed my expectations. So I guess that makes Joe the Jerry Seinfeld of this group here. Everything evens out, you know. I regret that I ended up being the Elaine de Yer Costanza here. But that's the way
it plays. I've watched a little Seinfeld, so I get the references. But
yes.
Maya's actually seen more of it than I have. I missed most of those days, but I'm aware of the show and do enjoy it.
Yes, yes. And that was a thing where, suffice it to say on that one that when Costanza's fortunes ended up going up, Elaine's plummeted. So although fittingly enough, I mean, I am a guy who had a fantasy football team once called the Elaine Bennis Dance Studio. So I guess it is fitting that I would be the Bennis of this group. And, you know, congratulations to the Costanza here, as it were. You know, it's certainly been a better year. Look, if you were being honest, Derek, I'm sure you'd say better than you've anticipated at this point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't know they'd be like this. I definitely had high hopes. You know, they looked promising last year and then sort of trailed off at the end there. So I did expect great things, but being number one in the league, you know, I knew they were capable of it, but I think they, you know, credit to Steve Keim. I think he's still one of the best GMs in the league. He put together this monster roster that he continued to improve when Max Williams went down. They got Zach Ertz from Philly for basically nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Another great pull by him. So, I mean, they have that front office managed to put together this team. But it's funny that you said that you have them ranked so high, because if you look across national media, even today as them 10-2, you don't hear more than a few peeps about the Arizona Cardinals. They're not fun. They're not sexy to talk about. And, you know, I think it's going to remain like that until we get, you know, till we get that championship that I'm expecting them to get.
Well, careful about talking that way, as somebody who was talking that way several months ago. And I will say, in the aftermath of that Cardinals-Browns game, which, you know, again, I can allude to Derek here, was not a fun one on Twitter that afternoon, but I was complaining to some of my friends later. I said, you know, could there be such a thing as a class action lawsuit against the team when you've talked a bunch of crap on their behalf and they leave you holding the bag as the Browns so pathetically left me holding the bag on that day there. I'd love to be the plaintiff in one of these things. Joe, I don't know if there's any kind of a market for any type of lawsuit like that. I got to think Philly would have had a few lawsuits like this over a period of time if there was such a thing.
Well, I'd be in on that with the Georgia Bulldogs. Everyone who's had ears, especially this past weekend, I said, oh, cool, this is going to be close. It'll be over by halftime. Go watch the Hallmark Channel. You'll be fine. You come back to it. It'll be a 43-point victory. And, you know, we saw what happened. They gave up 6.9 points per game. Never a consecutive series back-to-back with a touchdown. Alabama reels off 5 and puts up 41 points. It was one weekend. I was glad I wasn't on the air, as I would have told everyone to take out mortgages, second mortgages, third mortgages at 6.5-point line against a not so good Alabama team. Yeah, that was embarrassing. So anyway, yes, I'm all for the class action lawsuit against teams like that.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I think Philly's saving all their money to sue Ben Simmons. So.
Oh God, that's just only a Philly. That's a story that it's so embarrassing. Like, I'm embarrassed for, like, everybody. Like, who are you embarrassed for? Well, everybody. The front office, him, you know, his agents, the TDC, the city, it's just awful. It's just awful. Just please go away. Just go away. But no one wants him. Who would want him? I wouldn't take him at this point. He's broken, and he's, you know, not mentally strong. It's a shame. Back-to-back. Number one overall picks, they go Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons. There's the process. Just add Joel Embiid, and you know what happened. One guy develops some ridiculous shoulder injuries no one's ever heard of, and the other guy shoots 34% from the line and won't shoot a shot in the fourth quarter in a playoff game, and it takes COVID on games.
Yeah.
You can't make it up. You can't make it up.
Yeah. And
I love it. It's always fun triggering Philly fans. Like, I mean, it felt like that. It's so easy. I mean, the Carson Wentz days were always wild.
Totally.
Held on to him for so long, which maybe y'all were right based on his performance this year.
He was playing well this year, but people thought I was a hater. I wasn't a hater after a year, after the Super Bowl year, maybe the second year after that. I just questioned things. All right, I haven't seen him, you know, clutch. I haven't seen him stay healthy. Remember, in 5 years in Philly, he was in the postseason. He was like 1 of 3 for 5 yards in the postseason. So that's your $180 million guy.
Well,
1 for 3, 5 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I could have done that.
Well, yeah. And I want to point out also here, Joe, what is probably obvious, having alluded to the Cardinals, we also got a Suns guy here. Pointing that out about your Philly downfall here. If we were to encapsulate a movie title right now, I think it would be The Unbearable Smugness of Being, because anybody from the Valley these days is riding very, very high.
Hey, it's titled
Unbelievable.
Just like Tampa.
Dude.
So thrilled for you. I went to Villanova. I was on the air the night that my producer, Devon Givens, said, hey, by the way, my it's his cousin. He goes, he just committed to Villanova. No one heard of him, Mikal Bridges. I was like, come on the air and, you know, whatever. Then he won a couple championships with Nova. We were all thrilled that the Sixers drafted. His mom works for a friggin' organization.
That's right.
And he gets traded like 5 minutes later to like a 19-win team. I'm thinking, oh, that's Siberia for this kid. You know, like 2 years later, you know, he had 2 games and none lead over the Bucks. And I was so happy for him. I'm glad he's doing well, signed a big contract, and yeah, we're all pumped for him.
I will say, in terms of Philly championships here, one of my fond memories is, and it ended up being kind of a freak blizzard that night, heading out for my friend's Super Bowl party, so I probably should have just been focusing on the wheel on the way home, I had on my phone, I had it dialed up on the app, I was listening to you doing the Eagles Super Bowl post-game victory thing, Joe. I will never forget that in my life and being so happy for you. And I'm thinking, he's living...
Oh, thank you. It was so much fun.
Yes, yes. And I'm thinking...
So much fun. Couldn't tell you.
You were living my Cavs moment, except you were actually on the air doing it. So it was, like, unbelievable, you know? And, yeah.
I too have a great... great sports moment in Philly. 2016, the Army-Navy game. The Army broke the streak that year. I was there for that game, stormed the field in Philly. It was a great time. I think we tried to pull down the goalpost, and a lot of people got yelled at by the Philly cops. So I think we saved. we attempted to ruin the Eagles season, but we were deterred.
You know, while we're at it, Derek, can we get a prediction from you here, Army-Navy game here this week, our resident in-house expert?
Oh, I mean, I think it's going to Army. I'm seeing – thinking 24-16. I think it'll be close, but not that close.
Okay. All right. So you decided to be charitable then. Okay.
Yeah, I'll give them a couple of They're always close, but, I'd love to see us blow them out once.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, could happen, and it'll be an interesting game, as always, getting the national spotlight all to itself before we start the 1,937 bowl games the following Saturday. So that's the... The only
new stadium too. They're doing it in MetLife. They haven't done it in New York in a few years.
Wow. Like
over a decade.
Wow. Oh, okay. That'll be a good setting for it, doing it there. Yeah, I always like seeing it in the different settings, and they played it in Baltimore in one of these years, didn't they?
Yeah, they jumped in between Philly and Baltimore. I think when I was there, it was I think two of them were in Baltimore, two of them were in Philly.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Yeah, because that. It's always fun seeing it in the different locales. And as far as the NFC goes here, so as far as teams that could potentially knock off the Cardinals here at the top of the conference, I mean, it seems like it's a very, very, very short list. And there might be somebody that you know, Derek, piping up going, "What about the Cowboys?" But we know that's not going to happen. So I'm going to limit it at this point. I'm going to say... Green Bay, Tampa Bay, I think it comes down to them. The Rams have basically landed right about where I thought at the beginning of the year, which is a wild card team, probably the 5 seed, but I didn't see them winning the division. Frankly, I saw Frisco winning the division before they kind of fell apart. So, but of the teams at the top there, Derek, how do you see it shaking out with the ones that are going to be left with Arizona in the end?
Yeah, I mean, you can't count out Tampa. I know they've been, but that defense is still just absolutely incredible. And the amount of offensive weapons Brady has, I mean, you can't really stop it. But I'm pretty confident in what we have in Arizona. But I think of that group, I'm most worried about. I'd say Tampa. I think we got the Rams number. Green Bay, I think, will be good to have that revenge game. And yeah, Dallas. I mean, they do. If they get the run game going, which they haven't, but
right.
If they somehow turn it around, that'd be a fear. That's probably the biggest hole in the Cardinals. Game right now is their rush defense, but no, I think Tampa's gonna worry me the most.
Speaking of Dallas, I got a despondent text from one of my FDH Lounge dignitaries, my longtime friend John Adams, the other day, who I believe has Ezekiel Elliott on one of his teams, going, "Elliott must be a COVID long hauler. That's the only explanation I can come up with." Yeah, shout out to Johnny and his fantasy woes. Thankfully, I wouldn't know anything about that this year. This has been the best fantasy year I've had with my two teams in a decade. But as far as it goes from your perch, Joe, and looking at this here, the teams at the top of the conference, I mean, I'm guessing you would agree that it's probably a very short list in terms of the teams that would be likely to come through the field and end up in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think so. Right now, I think they have it right. I mean, once in a while, you'll see a team come out of nowhere. But I'm looking at the potential wild card teams. The Eagles are like the bottom, the last one in right now. They're not going anywhere. Forget about Washington. Listen, you ask me, you put two teams up against each other, the first thing I say, who are the quarterbacks? What do we got going here?
Right.
I will, usually side with the quarterbacks. I'm with Derek. I think the Bucs present the biggest problem. They are the world champions. Oh, and by the way, they have the greatest quarterback of all time. Oh, and by the way, he has tons of weapons, and they have 22 guys returning. I know their defense. I mean, they're stalwart on the against the run, against the pass. They've been tightening up, but I mean, after that embarrassing loss in Washington, when Brady gave like a 90-second press conference, you rarely see him show emotion. He was very upset. Plus 30 points the last three games, three easy wins. They're tops in the league in offense. I do like what Green Bay has done this year, because the last 2 years I thought they were fugazi. I thought they'd get boat raced in Frisco 2 years ago,
right.
And they did. I thought Brady would beat them in Green Bay. He did. I mean, there were some lapses there by the Packers. But Green Bay has gotten better this year. Like, I'm more on board with Green Bay for what they've done. They don't run the ball all that well. They have Aaron Rodgers, little chip on his shoulder, coming off the MVP season. But I can't necessarily explain the Cardinals. But they're doing something right because they won 7 games on the road versus no losses, all by 10 points or more. I think that might be like a record. And I'm just thinking about when they drafted them. I mean, they got rid of Josh Rosen, which I love when a team doesn't throw bad money over worse money or whatever the saying goes. They didn't like him. They found a better option in Kyler Murray. Yeah, God bless you if you can get it done. The guy, you know, if he's 5'8", on a warm day, I'd be impressed. He's been very good. I didn't think a guy that short could be that good of a quarterback. You know, he's next to Michael Vick. He might be the fastest quarterback I've ever seen. Certainly the quickest. And they Cliff Kingsbury. What? Everyone criticized that call. And these two guys are like getting it done. 10-2. And I think the one loss they had was a bad loss. I think they had a backup quarterback in. I don't know if it was the Carolina game.
That was one of the 3 Colt McCoy games. The return of McCoy game.
That's exactly right.
But 2 of his games, to their credit, the last 7 that we won with Colt McCoy behind center. We win 2 out of 3
I know.
Of games.
That's my thing. I'm like, it's time to start maybe really, you know, because. Listen, the Cardinals haven't done anything in a long time, so you kind of like want to wait to see till it happens. But I have taken a very good look at this team, and I've bet against them a couple times when I thought the line was a little goofy, and Colt McCoy was, and boy, they made a fool out of me. So I would not count them out. You know, I usually go this Brady's my guy first, then Rodgers, and then I'll go Kyler Murray even over Dak in this situation, but. Zach Ertz pick up, like you mentioned there, tremendous move. Gave up nothing for him, basically. And DeAndre Hopkins is back. I like what they're doing. I like how well they're coached. The Steelers on the road. I'm with Steelers. They're killing teams on the road, which is hard to do in the NFL. So I would not turn a blind eye to them, but I would still go the GOAT. Anytime Brady's in the mix, you know, I'm sorry, but he's in the mix, and I will probably lean towards him. And listen, you know, a little shaky start defensively. Yeah, laissez-faire game in Philadelphia here and there. Trevor Siemian beats him on a nationally televised Sunday afternoon. Tyler, the kid from Washington who gave him problems in the playoffs last year, beats him. He throws 2 picks early. The worst pick I've ever seen him throw against Atlanta, and he's still winning cover big. So I'm still going with Tampa. And it would not surprise me if Arizona went to the Super Bowl.
I agree with everything you're saying there, Joe. And I got to say, having made the Seinfeld reference before, I guess we're sort of making this officially a Tony Bruno tribute show here as I make another sitcom reference. But the sitcom reference I'm going to make is from one of the all-time great sitcoms, albeit an overlooked one, The League. I think after everything you said about
I love The League.
You know what?
That was a great show.
You know,
great
you guys
show.
Know where
they
I'm going.
Fell apart.
Joe Stajak, you are a height supremacist for everything you said about Kyler Murray.
I know, I agree. We respect our short kings.
Yeah.
I remember him at the combine. They're like, oh, he's 5'10". I'm like, are you guys out of your mind? He's 5'10". He comes up to my kneecap, and I'm so impressed with what he's done in national football. You don't see it that often.
Wasn't Drew Brees like 5'10"?
Drew Brees is like 5'11", 6 foot at most. You're right, but he just looks different. Like, don't you think? He kind of looks like Lilliputian. He's got these hands that you don't know how he grips the football, and then he goes like this with his wrist, and it goes 65 yards in the air. He's just unbelievable. I just like watching him play. And again, aside from Michael Vick, he might be the quickest, fastest quarterback I've ever seen. You can't catch him. You can't catch him. And he's got a gun like you've never seen. And I like the story because he kind of went up against a lot of things, a lot of stereotypes, you know, and naysayers because of the height, he being one of them. And he's proven me wrong, and I think, you know, I just like the story. And I'll root for him. I mean, I'm a GOAT guy, but I'll root for Arizona. I like Zach.
Yeah.
Zach Ertz is a great guy here, too. And I'm glad that they put him in a position to maybe take another shot at the championship.
Real quick, to talk about Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, he as much as, you know, we've seen Tyler improve, Cliff Kingsbury's improvement as a head coach has been vast. I follow the fans, you know, on Reddit and everything else. And, you know, last year we were calling for the man's job. And you know, same thing with parts of the year this year. But he has improved his coaching game every time. They've significantly ran Kyler in the option less. They've put him in less positions to get hurt. They've let him throw the ball more. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury is, I mean, maybe this is too much, but if the Cardinals keep on this run, I think he's a shoe-in for Coach of the Year.
Totally agree. Absolutely. Not even close.
Probably, yes. I think it's fair to say that he has shown himself to be the J.B. Bickerstaff of the NFL this year. But as far as it goes, with as I try to find something positive to say about the North Coast right about now, because in the AFC, the funny thing is here, as I was getting ready to sit down with you guys here tonight, it's been a really, really weird year, but in the end, everything is shaking out to really almost the whole missionary position type AFC kind of a thing. You got New England towards the top. Kansas City is back from whatever siesta they were on there. I mean, they had a historically bad defense for a period of time, and now it's the defense almost kind of helping out the offense a little bit, which is really weird. Baltimore is still vaguely in the mix when they're not threatening to lose the CFL caliber teams left and right here. So in the AFC, it's been, and again, the aforementioned tragedy of my Browns this year, biggest underachievers in the league, top five roster in the league, but not doing anything with it. A team that a lot of people are hoping, well, maybe they studied up and got healthy during the bye. Well, looking at this team, You know, the way they've been playing, it would be more likely that they'd be, waist deep in the nose candy and hanging out with the side pieces out in a 304. Not that I'm bitter or anything, you know, but as far as it goes, when you're looking at the top of the conference, Joe, how do you see it kind of shaking out right now? Because to me, I see Kansas City really kind of starting to reassert itself here. And it's one of these things where in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. They've had a tough year, but I mean, you know, Tennessee is up there too, technically, in terms of record. We should just reassign them like a 5-7 record because that's what they are right now, essentially. They're sort of cheating.
Pretty much.
Having the record they are, being in that spot, I don't take them seriously.
Yeah, with Henry gone, they take off like 3 wins.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I actually, the aforementioned FDH Lounge dignitary, John Adams, today actually said to me he thinks the Colts could be a dark horse in the mix here. Your old Carson Wentz, as we go back to that, Joe, so... When you're looking at the top of the conference, how do you see it kind of shaking out?
Well, I know the Pats are the in vogue pick, and that's great. And I think the fact that the GOAT goes somewhere else and they have a down year, 1 year later, they're like the talk of the league. They've won 7 straight. You know, they threw the ball 3 times the other night and won the football game. But I'm not ready to go there yet. I love Belichick for what he's done. And with Brady, and what I almost beat Brady if Nick Falk makes that 56-yard kick, which was impressive, holding Brady to 19 points. Impressive anywhere, anytime. But I guess they're, because of their defense is number one overall, and they do run the ball well, and they're obviously coached very well, I'll have to give them a shot. I don't like rookie quarterbacks. I do like Mac Jones. I would not necessarily trust him if he was given a lot to do in a playoff game. You know, he doesn't throw the ball downfield that much, but he doesn't make mistakes. He was a great pick at 15. Again, that's Belichick. But then you look at the other teams. You guys mentioned Tennessee without Derrick Henry. Is Ryan Tannehill do a ton for you? Not much for me. The Ravens are so up and down, it's ridiculous. Lamar Jackson, you know, he'll have the worst first half you've ever seen. Next thing you know, he throws 4 touchdown passes. Comes back to beat the Colts in the second half, that ridiculous game. Probably should have won the game against Pittsburgh. Love the play call. But they're kind of up and down. 14th in offense, 9th in defense. KC, you mentioned. See, I'd be on board with this because I love what Steve Spagnuolo's done in turning that around after they got thumped by the Titans. I think they won 5 straight. The close game against the Giants. And But Patrick Mahomes doesn't seem right to me. The offense doesn't seem right. I think in the last, the winning streak, they scored over 23 points once. That used to be like, you remember the playoff game against Houston? They were down 24-0, and next thing you know, they had the lead like 9 minutes later, because that's what they used to do. I think his mechanics are off. I don't know if he's that confident anymore. They tried to bolster the offensive line for him. The defense is a thing that's been carrying them, like you mentioned. I'm not sure which one of you mentioned it. Had the last 4 or 5 weeks, and they were horrendous at the beginning of the season.
Right.
So if they can get the offense right, you know, I love Tyreek Hill, I love Travis Kelce, and of course, if Mahomes, it's going to come down to Mahomes. Can he get himself right? Might take an offseason, might take a couple weeks, I don't know, but to me, they'd be the most dangerous team if they can keep that defense in line. Could you look at the Bills, even quarterback said, you know, what kind of a we're falling apart, basically. I mean, again, you know, I know they beat up on the Jets after they scored 6 points in Jacksonville. I mean, they're up and down. They got thumped by Tennessee on national television a few weeks ago. Don't quite get them. I love the Chargers at the beginning of the season. There's, to me, it's disappointing to me as your Browns are to you, Rick. And, you know, they're up and down, 27th in the league in defense. I love their quarterback, but they're inconsistent. The Colts, Anthony, 10th defense in the league, Carson Wentz. He's played well. He really has. I think, you know, after the two double ankle injuries, things early in the season, he and Frank Reich have kind of gotten it together. And, you know, they've had some tough losses. You know, that the game against Tennessee with the 14-point lead, and he threw a left-handed interception. And then they blew the game to the Ravens on national television as well. They could be in a lot better position. I mean, I think they started 1-4, 6-6 now. They could be dangerous. But again, I look for the quarterback, and in the AFC, the quarterback to me that stands out is Patrick Mahomes, but he's not right. So to me, it's kind of a crapshoot. I'll buy into the Patriots a little bit because of the defense. You know, defense does win in the playoffs, and the running game is still the old school business model. If you can get that done, but you also do need a quarterback at times because again, quarterbacks make their bones in the playoffs in the fourth quarter and overtime. Mac Jones is a rookie. I'm not going to criticize him if he fails, but that's the only thing that would hold me back against the Patriots is Mac Jones. Not that he's done anything to make me think he's going to do something horrific and cost his team a game, but, I look for the quarterback, and to me, I'll take Kansas City over New England if I had to in the AFC.
Well, yeah, and that's, you look at the Monday night game the other night, and after the game, Sean McDermott with the whole thing of like, well, let's not give Bill Belichick too much credit.
Right? Yeah. What was that about?
Well, you know what? That's not the flex he thinks it is.
Fool himself, Sean.
That's not the flex he thinks it is, because Sean McDermott is the idiot that let them go for 200-plus yards on the ground when they knew what was coming every play. So, yeah, it's, you know,
right.
The unspoken second half of that thing is all Belichick did was take advantage of my idiocy. So maybe he shouldn't have said that. That's just a thought. But, but Derek, a lot to react to there from Joe's thoughts. How do you see the puzzle at the top of the AFC kind of shaking out?
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with a whole lot of what Joe said there. Again, obviously, everyone loves to talk about New England, but, you know, I don't know. I don't disagree. I think we'll see how Mac Jones does in the playoffs. A lot of people are liking to say, oh, this is just like 2001, but I don't really see it in New England.
I don't buy that either, no.
Yeah. I think it's just a different – I think it's just – it sounds good. Kansas City, we talk about Mahomes, and, yeah, Mahomes started off slow, but when you watch most of the games, there's not – most of those interceptions aren't on him. He's getting a lot of drop passes, a lot of tipped-up passes. I mean, I don't think that offense is in sync, and I don't know how much of the blame I really want to put on Mahomes. So I think once they kind of get it going again – I do think Kansas City will be pretty dangerous. And then, obviously, you know, I do think the Colts can be that dark horse team. I think Jonathan Taylor is an absolute animal, having a hell of a season. That five touchdown game he had a few weeks ago.
Amazing.
And he's still like, absolutely amazing. He's, you know, he's having almost an Adrian Peterson year in terms of touchdowns.
Yes. Yeah.
But overall, I mean, the AFC, you know, a lot, you look at the records, you look at all the teams, you look at all the games, and you say, okay, is the parity just really high here, or what's the issue? And I think just the AFC just isn't that good. I mean, you look at all the games, It's like a, you know, it's a drunken bar fight every single game. They're all sloppy. There's, I mean, it's true, though. You look at every single AFC and AFC games, and they're just sloppy games. And just these, like, you know, the AFC North, you got, you know, Baltimore, Cincinnati, these teams just, they, you know, the like you said about the Ravens and Lamar, he'll have a shitty first half, and they don't come in the second half and then light it up. I mean, it's just drunken, sloppy bar fights every single game. So I really don't think the AFC is all that good. And I really think whichever team makes it in the Super Bowl, they're either going to get stomped by the NFC team, or, you know, the NFC is really going to knock each other off because just the overall caliber you have over there. And, you know, maybe a Washington knocks off a Tampa in a lucky win, and then, you know, maybe, you know, a Rams knocks off a Green Bay, and they're going in, and now you have a not the best team against, you know, a not so great team. So I think the AFC is just going to keep being this. I mean, we'll see about Mac Jones. Maybe New England is for real, but I haven't been that impressed by the AFC this year.
No, I would agree with that. And a couple of notes there. That Jonathan Taylor game a couple weeks ago, to be honest with you, was pissing me off because on one of my fantasy football teams, Ricky O and the Gurus, Lucha Libre, Gridiron Academy, he was putting up that performance for us. And we're beating this guy like 95-21. And I'm a firm believer in life that these things are finite. And I'm screaming for him to stop scoring. Stop scoring. We're going to need it later in the season. You're costing me a championship. Stop using it up now. So, but Taylor, he's having an amazing, amazing type year. You know, as far as the stuff with Baltimore, perhaps the most perplexing game that Lamar Jackson had this year was the very poor game, the four interception game against the same Browns, where Joe Woods previously allowed the Cardinals to go up and down the field virtually at will the entire game. So Lamar Jackson somehow couldn't get it done against them. I'll tell you, that night, so before the game started, Yellowstone came on. I've been watching and doing show previews for this show for Yellowstone and Succession. So I'm like, okay, I'll keep the Browns on the second screen, right? And I was still so pissed about the Browns when Yellowstone was done. I was like, you know what? I'm not waiting to watch Succession tomorrow. I'm going to keep this going and keep the Browns on the second screen because I just couldn't take it. I just couldn't
focusing
on them with my full intensity. It was just too much. And I texted some friends of mine and I said, they're teasing major character deaths on Succession tonight. And somehow this Browns game is still more anxiety ridden for me. You know, but that's what it's been like watching this team as we've gone through.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Browns sneak their way just one game. Week 17, they're one game. They just got to win to make it to the playoffs, and they somehow lose.
They're
going to just get right there.
Could be.
A little streak. I mean, I would never wish that for you, Rick.
The award for hubris for a football fan this year actually goes to one of our own FDH Lounge dignitaries, my close personal longtime friend, Chris Galloway, who went to the Chargers game that we played out there because his theory was, I want to go to that game, I want to see the Browns play in the L.A. Stadium before I come back in February to watch them in the Super Bowl.
That was my favorite game of the year. I had the Chargers. And I laid the points, and they're driving down, only needing to kick a field goal to win the game. And all of a sudden, the Browns, the red sheep parts, and they basically grab Eckler and throw him into the end zone.
Yeah.
Because they needed the ball back. That was my instant cover. I'm usually on the wrong side of that game. But anyway, remember that game very well.
Gosh, I'm glad we could cooperate on that one for you, buddy. And my pain,
sorry, pal.
My existential pain is your profit. Congratulations. Well, you know,
don't come around too often for me. Again, that's me being on the wrong side of that. That's just commonplace. So
yeah, but you know what?
On the right side, I'm like, oh, how about that one? One in 100.
I'm not saying it all evens out. But I will say, and I have proclaimed us the winner of Ricky O. With the Cavs and the Red Wings coming back, I'm watching all their games this winter. I'm loving it on that part. I'm trying to pretend the Browns don't exist. It's going to be a little harder this week since they're not on the bye anymore, but I'll be back watching and dealing with the existential misery that is being a Cleveland Browns fan. I haven't won a Super Bowl ever. I haven't won a championship in my lifetime, and it doesn't look like it's going to end in February. Spoiler alert, but... As we're going through,
it could be worse because you look at the other Ohio team, Cincinnati. I can't even get a read on him. Joe Burrow looks great, and then he doesn't. I mean, you want to talk about? The AFC's least favorite word is consistency because the Bengals and most of these teams they flip back and forth between. All right, we're gonna win. We're gonna play well this week. All right, now we're gonna just throw 8 picks and fumble and cry. So the Bengals have been the most confusing team to me.
Derek's totally right. You can't figure it out this year. Like usually, you can't figure it out, but this is ridiculous. I mean, the Bengals go in and thump the Ravens in Baltimore. Next week, Mike White throws for 410 yards against them in his first game and beats them. You know, the Broncos go into Dallas and just annihilate the Cowboys. They go home and lose to the Eagles. You know, Trevor Sim, Cooper Rush comes in, hasn't played in 3 years. He wins his game against the Vikings in Minnesota. I mean, Trevor Siemian beats the Ghosts on national TV. It's been crazy. But you, I love to talk to Barfly, by the way. I have to use that there, if I may, podcast. But you're totally right. You can't the inconsistency is just, I mean, because I thought the Bengals after that game against the Ravens, this team's for real. Lamar Chase, Fiction, and they got it going on. And then tank. Can't figure it out. Same with the Chargers. I done trying to figure it out. Any given Sunday, I always tell Callis because he's like, "How's that happen?" And he's always like texting me, "How's this happen?" Any given Sunday, Steve. How many times do I have to say it?
Dude, he's a lawyer. He's looking for logic on stuff. I mean, that's, you know, sorry, counselor. I can't explain this one to you, buddy. It's the randomness of life. This actually feels more like what we thought the COVID season of last year was going to be when people would be out for chunks, whatever. It just, for whatever reason, this has been a lot worse than last year as far as teams just, you know, staying, again, aside from some of the teams in the NFC and then some of the teams in the NFC that started off hot and falling off and it's kind of thinned out a little bit there. But outside of that, really, the rest of the league has been up and down to, you know, really piss poor in a lot of instances here with some of these franchises. But started out here with you, Joe. Any other notes from around the league here? Anything on your mind we didn't get to yet?
I think we covered most of it. I was a little taken back, and I was with a very close friend of mine today, Don Tollefson. He was a major sportscaster at Idol, and was my professor, and blah, blah, blah. And he was a good friend of Sean McDermott. I was a little surprised at some of that went on. What cracks me up, I don't know if you saw the headline of the New York Daily News. It was talking about how the Eagles were laughing at the Jets and not earning respect, you know, or not giving them respect. And, you know, Robert Saleh said, well, you have to earn it. I mean, they're not wrong necessarily, but, you know, like Fletcher Cotton. And I'm thinking, who are the Eagles to be laughing at anyone? I mean, excuse me?
Right.
Like, it's just, you know, some craziness. But I do like, I'll go back to what Derek said. I think the NFC, because of the quarterbacks, I mean, look at the four top teams that, you know, should slide into their division winning situations, and you got two Hall of Famers. I don't know if Kyler Murray will ever get there. He might. Dak Prescott, probably not, but I mean, I like the quarterbacks there. Look over in the AFC, and the only one that stands out to me, at least in terms of heading, Lamar Jackson, maybe a half here. I don't know. He hasn't been great in the playoffs. And Patrick Mahomes. So I'm with Derek. I side towards the NFC. However, you can only get one of those teams in the Super Bowl, and anything can happen. But I'll put my money on the NFC to win the title.
Hey, Joe, quick follow up on that Jets Eagles game. Of course, they play every 4 years, green and white, green and white. Be honest with me. Are there ever moments when they're playing that game when you look at the TV and it's like, wait, is it which team am I rooting for again?
I'm glad you brought that up because
the Eagles were black, didn't they?
Did they? I didn't see.
Or was that the Jets?
The Jets wore the black.
Oh, see, I didn't see any clips from this week, so it wouldn't happen this time then. Okay.
One of my favorite guys, my college program is University of Miami, and I turn on the game, and I haven't even really sat down yet, and I'm looking, I just look up, and Braxton Barrios, I didn't even know he was still in the league. He played for Miami. He's with the Jets. He runs the ball like 70 yards. At first, I was like, I didn't know we picked him up.
See, I didn't even see any clips for this week, so I didn't see if either team deviated from the standard patterns of it, but that's pretty funny nonetheless. So, all right, I'll flip it to you, Derek. Any other thoughts of yours we didn't get to yet?
No, I think we covered a lot of it. I think one of the most interesting storylines for, you know, half the league that won't make the playoffs is the way the coaching carousel is going to go. I mean, yep. The college one's been insane, obviously, with, you know, the Brian Kelly and the Lincoln Riley news. But I think there'll be some odd ones in the NFL too. I mean, I don't see Urban Meyer really sticking around, but you never know. But I mean, there's a few interesting situations. You obviously got the Las Vegas without a coach right now.
Right. Sure.
So it's gonna be, and then who knows what's gonna happen in Chicago. But and you know, but I mean, the coaching carousel is gonna be real interesting. I'm curious if that'll bleed into college with some of those change outs. I mean, that seems to be the way the league's kind of going. With those, you know, the younger coaches coming straight out of college, I think that's kind of the way we're transitioning. But and then the only other thing that was interesting, and I totally forgot about this until Joe said it, is the big name quarterbacks that came out of nowhere for just a game this year has been hilarious. I started laughing when he said Mike White, but I forgot how absurd that game was. You got Cole McCoy. Who came in for two games. You got Cooper Rush. I mean, you can go down the list and Gardner Minshew the other night.
Gardner Minshew had a good game.
It's just been absolutely wild, the amount of
bizarre
quarterbacks just poking their heads out, either having an amazing game or having a horrible game, and then going back into the sand until their starter comes back. It's been just hilarious to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Totally right. Totally agree there.
And in terms of the carousel, I mean, I wouldn't want to say anything to irresponsibly jack up anybody's anxieties or anything, but how about some Cliff Kingsbury to Oregon buzz here? Phil Knight and the Nike money, anybody?
Well, we just got called. I don't know if he's our guy. I was kind of looking for a little more of a hard target search. We always go with our ex-players and whatever. I got whacked. In a conference game by Utah by 28 points. Everyone's clamoring to give him money, so we got Mario Cristobal. We'll see how that goes. I would have liked that Lincoln Riley, but what are you going to do? We got beats of the punch.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And I just love the Urban Meyer to Notre Dame narrative. I'm just going to keep
seeing that. Isn't that great? That's phenomenal. That's just phenomenal.
Meanwhile,
I hope it happens. That'd be just pure comedy.
I got 20 texts in a row from a friend of mine the other day who I'm going to leave nameless for his benefit, ranting about Marcus Freeman being an affirmative action hire at Notre Dame and how it's going to blow up in their face.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going to out the individual here, but it was pretty funny. But
I was really hoping they slid into the playoffs somehow and won it all with Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly spends 12 years there.
Right.
And then they get a ring. I would win the whole thing.
Exactly. You know, Brian Kelly, who is now walking around affecting an accent.
A debutante.
Like, yes, like Bobby Boucher's mama and the water boy as far as his new accent. And, you know, he's sounding like one of the swamp people. But, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. But gentlemen, a joy, as I knew this would be, bringing you both on here. Like I said, I pointed at the fence and called my shot before we did this. Nobody will ever believe you guys haven't done a million of these things here together. But Joe Stazak, Derek Joseph, thank you so much. We'll definitely put this combo again here together in the future. Thanks for both being on, guys. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for being in the audience for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1417.